Basic trust is formed or damaged very early on. In the first weeks of life, the connection between mother and child shapes a person in terms of whether or not they can trust in life later on. If the mother is there and the child does not suffer from a lack of physical affection, love and attention in the first weeks or months, this person has a solid, emotional foundation for their life. He develops a conviction, everything I need is there and I am lovable. The person will later be able to transfer this knowledge to life and will not develop an existential sense of lack. You will then have a deep trust that life means well for you, even when things get difficult. And that is exactly what is important if you want to accompany people who are grieving for relatives. If the medium does not radiate a fundamental trust in life, it cannot provide authentic support. The support offered will seem contrived and therefore will not have the effect that grief counseling should actually have. What evidence can you expect? An important point that always provides material for heated discussions is the provability of life after death. With the help of quantum physics, scientists have now discovered that there must be something like an existence after life and that a non-material connection between people is also possible, regardless of how many kilometers or whether physical death lie between them. Since every medium works a little differently and has different areas of expertise, clients cannot expect the same thing from every sensitive person. Nevertheless, contact with the spiritual world should prove itself in a variety of ways. And that is what it does when there is a real connection. First of all, it is important not to go to a medium with certain expectations. You should know how this particular person works so that you know what is possible and what is not. A reputable medium can explain their own way of working and their method. You should not be afraid to ask about it, because it helps you understand yourself and you should always have enough time. For example, there are people with mediumistic talent whose strengths lie in being able to name the names, birthdays or age of the deceased. Others describe specific images and can describe places to which they have or had a certain connection in great detail. Another specialty is describing the personality of a deceased person. Some mediums can perceive the emotional attitude of the deceased to certain life situations and people very well and express it well. It is also possible to describe the circumstances of an accident or death, which is particularly important if there are still uncertainties and the relatives are still in a state of uncertainty. The following list contains the most important evidence that is generally possible in mediumistic contacts. But it is important to know that you cannot or should not expect all points in one session. Only in the rarest of cases is a medium able to name all points. There are reasons for this and this will be explained later. Information that a medium can receive from the deceased. Appearance during their lifetime. Personality, strengths and weaknesses. Description of the living space during their lifetime. Birthdays, memorial days, etc. Occupation, hobbies. Things the deceased liked to do. Things the deceased liked to eat or drink. Habits or quirks. Description of the illness the deceased suffered from. Cause of death. Feelings during the dying process. Feelings that connect the deceased with the relatives. How the deceased experienced his funeral. How he sees his life now, in retrospect, his quintessence. Of course, there are reasons why not every medium receives the same amount of information, nor is it necessary to provide all of this evidence to prove existence after death. If two or three points have already been met and the correct information was received from the medium in this regard, life after death is already more than likely. Because where else would the sensitive person get this information from if not from the spiritual level? Often it is the small, very personal things that provide the proof. It is therefore important that the focus for such a connection to the spiritual world is not exclusively on the evidence, because then the actual, healing meaning of such a contact is lost. The most important purpose should be the exchange between relatives and the deceased. One should use the opportunity to address and clarify all the things that have remained open with the loss of the loved one, because this is the only way to find one's inner peace. Evidence provides certainty, but unfortunately not deep, emotional healing. Why can't a medium provide any desired evidence? This question is justified if one considers the image of the perception of sensitive people. It does not just depend on the medium which information flows and which does not. The state of consciousness of the deceased also plays a major role. It is not the case that you die and then automatically become an all-knowing angelic being who is bursting with wisdom. After death, the soul of the deceased is in the level of consciousness that corresponds to the thinking that this person had before they died. Here is an example: if the deceased was an introverted person during their lifetime who had difficulty expressing feelings through words, this weakness will usually also be apparent in contact with the medium. The deceased then has difficulty communicating their feelings, and so the mediumistic person can only pass on the information they receive. Another example of this would be the situation where a deceased person committed suicide and has since realized that it was not the right way to end their life. In this case, the deceased may evade the question when the medium asks them about the cause of death. There are also things that you, as a spiritual being, don't like to talk about because you fear unpleasant reactions from your relatives. In such moments, the persistence of the medium is crucial. By asking specific questions of the deceased, you can get to the truth, but this requires a lot of experience and inner security. There are also deceased people who don't like the medium and therefore don't want to make proper contact. This can happen, and if you remember the deceased's human preferences and look at the medium using these criteria, then as a relative you can usually understand why the chemistry isn't right. If the deceased had problems with this type of person during their lifetime, then it is sometimes not surprising that they are not happy with the choice of medium. And of course this also affects the quality of the contact. It is only a shame if the medium is not confident enough to say, "It is not working well enough, let's leave it at that for today." Unfortunately, sensitive people often present it in such a way that the deceased does not want any contact at all. Sometimes the most bizarre reasons are conjured up as to why the connection to the deceased was not established, and unfortunately this only leads to confusion and worsening of the relative's grief. A serious medium should own up to it if they cannot cover one area or another. That is not a bad thing, because no one is perfect. But it is bad and irresponsible if you cannot own up to your own lack of talent and then blame the deceased. Because with such excuses you can plunge the relatives into deep despair, and all just to make yourself look better. Making mistakes is human, even with a medium. A very rare form of mediumistic work is that of a painting medium. Such people are very rare, as the pronounced sensitive gift must also be accompanied by a talent for painting. After all, the inner images or feelings that they receive must be translated into drawings. Here, two, there are different variants. For example, there are painting mediums that draw the portrait of a deceased person while communicating with them mentally, without ever having seen this person before. Then there are painting mediums that can depict life and key themes in the form of a tree. The medium can use his drawing to describe precise details of life and show what the biggest problems are that the person has or had. The drawing also makes corresponding solutions visible. A connection to the spiritual world or the afterlife is therefore most productive when all those involved engage with each other as impartially as possible and do not have a precise idea of what is going to happen, because that way there is room for everyone and everything. It is like with normal conversations. If one conversation partner only wants to hear a certain statement and tries to pin the other person down to it, then the other person will eventually lose interest in the conversation. They do not have the feeling that the other person is interested in a real exchange and understandably will eventually disengage. This is exactly how it can be with the deceased. I have already experienced many such situations myself and therefore know them from a variety of perspectives. Of course, I have also met deceased people who had trouble expressing their feelings and I did my best to reach a satisfactory result. On the other hand, there were also cases where the deceased provided one piece of evidence after another, but the relative waited for a very specific formulation. Everything else was of no importance. I found this very sad for everyone involved, because nobody was really happy with the conversation in the end. Others, however, demanded more and more proof than they already had and said, "Just one more and then I'll believe it." But it went on like this until the deceased told me that he was fed up with the game. The relative should believe it or not. He didn't care anymore. Another very amusing and touching situation was the following. A young woman was trying to get in touch with her deceased father. It was a very nice and harmonious conversation, but I wanted to give her something very special from her father as she was suffering so much from this loss. After I asked for very special proof, the deceased showed me a picture of a kitchen cupboard and a jar that was in this cupboard. In this jar there were lots of different tea bags and I wanted to know what this picture was about. He explained to me that his daughter had the habit of transferring all the tea bags from almost empty packets into it. He would find it very impractical, as you could only get to the lower bags if you emptied everything. I described this scene to her, and she was completely beside herself. She said, "That was the most rewarding thing for me, because now I know that my father is really with me." Because she had only developed this habit after her father's death, and he could not possibly know about it. For the young woman, this statement was the most healing of the entire session, and I was happy that I could do her this service. When in contact with the spiritual world, you cannot avoid taking the step of trust at some point. I myself kept receiving evidence, but still could not believe that I had such a mediumistic gift. Then I realized that there was only one solution, either I would get involved on this level or not. The security that I desperately sought through the evidence was simply a lack of certainty and a lack of trust in myself and my feelings. When I finally understood that and was able to trust the spiritual level, I received a lot more evidence on completely different levels. But at that point it was no longer important to me. My motivation had changed and trust has been the basis for my connection to the spiritual world ever since. And I no longer strain this connection unnecessarily with phrases like "prove it to me." Signs from the deceased. Basically, all deceased people have the same opportunities to show themselves. Which of these they can best use depends on the development of their luminous senses. Basically, the following signs from the deceased are possible. They can spread their personal scent, make noises, switch electrical devices on and off, switch lights on and off, make themselves physically tangible so that you feel that you are not alone in the room, enable you to see their aura, show themselves in dreams, move objects. In practice, however, not all deceased people have the same level of consciousness and therefore not all options for showing themselves are available to them to the same extent. The way they communicate depends on this. A few examples will help to understand this. If a deceased person did not have a strong sense of their body during their lifetime, they will have difficulty making themselves physically tangible for their relatives, because to do so they would first have to be able to activate this very quality in themselves. But since it is foreign to them, this option is not available to them. If the deceased was a person who had no connection to scents or smells, he cannot use this potential to make himself known to his relatives. Devices or light switches, on the other hand, can only be operated by those in the spiritual world who have a corresponding energy field. It must vibrate strongly so that the flow of electricity can be influenced. All of these examples show that souls have different possibilities and you cannot expect everything from everyone. It is important that the relative does not wait to be able to perceive the deceased with their physical senses. In very rare cases, one hears or sees with the physical senses, but one suddenly thinks one has heard that the deceased may have laughed. This perception takes place with the luminous senses. An important distinguishing feature of which senses one has just received is the following. If you were the only person in the room who perceived the corresponding signal, then the luminous senses were in use. If several people perceive the sound or smell, then it is the physical senses that have just been addressed and were in use. Many people get such signs, but quickly doubt their feelings and think it's more likely that they're a little crazy than to feel something that doesn't seem to be there. But it's easy to forget an important point. The body never lies, because it can't. This is evident. For example, in professional speakers who, despite taking many courses on body language, give themselves away again and again. The posture can only be controlled for a short time and quickly returns to the actual expression of the true, inner attitude. This means that if you physically feel that there is still something in the room, even though you are actually alone, then the body cannot artificially create this feeling through imagination. The body is an organ of expression that simply reacts to a variety of material and spiritual influences. However, you should be critical of also called signs, because not every whistle comes from the spiritual world, but perhaps you just haven't screwed the thermos flask properly. You should retain a certain critical ability and not attribute every sound or smell to a deceased person. However, if you are in good touch with your own perception, you can feel the difference between whether a deceased person is involved or not. Before you, for example, label a flickering lamp as a sign from the afterlife, you should at least first check whether the bulb is properly seated in the socket. If everything is okay with the lamp, then you can assume that a deceased person was nearby. However, if you do not want the spiritual visitor near you because you are afraid, you have the right to vehemently send him away and banish him from the room. If you are decisive enough, it will work. Can animals perceive the deceased? In contrast to most people, animals have very well-developed senses. Their luminous senses are also still well-developed alongside their physical senses. It is therefore only natural that they can perceive the deceased without any problems. Dogs, for example, express this by suddenly looking into an apparently empty corner and barking, even though they were previously lying there or sleeping completely calmly and relaxed. Or they suddenly wag their tails happily while looking at a certain spot, as if they were greeting someone. Cats, on the other hand, are usually not so positive about spiritual visitors. They hiss or suddenly leave the place where they were previously sleeping peacefully. However, there are also cats that react happily to the deceased by suddenly starting to purr. The dream level. For many, this level is a good way to meet the deceased. This is not possible for all people, as not everyone remembers their dreams even though they have them. Most people do, however, and thus offer the spiritual world a wonderful opportunity to meet. The advantage over other forms of perception is that our minds have a break while we sleep and cannot get in the way of the inner images. This is why some souls from the afterlife use this platform to be with the bereaved, to show themselves or even to communicate. There are also dreams in which you process things, but there is a noticeable difference between the processing level and the encounter level when you wake up in the morning. If you have really met on a soul level, it will feel as if you had had a rendezvous in the morning. When you are processing dreams, you tend to feel powerless because you have actually worked. Very experienced people can ask the deceased or the spiritual helper a question before falling asleep, and with a little luck they will even get an answer. For this method, however, you should use your own dream language. Even though many people received this gift of an encounter in a dream, you should not expect it to always work. It is all the easier for the deceased to meet their relatives and show themselves, as there are no great expectations in the air. 5. Helpful exercises. It is well known that practice makes perfect, and mediumship should be no exception. In other professions, people also regularly continue their education, and this recommendation naturally also applies to sensitive perception. After all the theory, practice is all the more important, because it is only in this that you can see whether you can implement and use your newly acquired knowledge. Apart from the practice, the practical application is a lot of fun. All exercises can also be carried out with children without any problem. But be careful, frustration is inevitable, as most children will pull all the exercises out of their sleeves, quite unlike adults. If you feel up to this defeat, then there is nothing wrong with practicing with children. You will not find any exercises in this book that show how to make contact with the deceased. The simple reason for this is that I want to prevent the misuse of these things. Experience has shown time and again that many people handle certain knowledge very irresponsibly. That is why I have decided against such exercises in this book. I hope that you can understand and relate to my decision. Sensory training. The human senses provide the most important basis for mediumistic contact and spiritual perception. That is why they should be trained and sensitized so that they are ready for use when you need them. This exercise is designed to check how your own bright senses are actually developing. Exercise preparation. Sit down comfortably and have something ready to write with. Now concentrate on your imagination and you can check how difficult or easy it is for you to use your senses to recall knowledge you have already stored. 1. Clairvoyance. Now call up in your mind's eye the image of a beach with palm trees, a golden yellow cornfield swaying in the wind, a beautifully decorated Christmas tree, a loved one, a campfire, a blue elephant. But really just the image, no appropriate sounds, smells or anything like that. Normally these images should appear very quickly in your mind's eye without much concentration. The faster a sense conveys an impression, the better it is developed. If it takes several minutes or doesn't work at all, then you know what you need to practice and sensitize. The first step you have just taken trains the sense of clairvoyance. In most people, this is well developed due to the constant visual overstimulation. Now follow the other bright senses in the same way. You can enter your results with the date in the lines below. If you repeat this exercise at some point, you can see what has improved in the meantime. Personal notes. 2. Clairaudience. Now remember the sound of splashing water, a breaking drain, burning wood in the fireplace, pleasant music, a revving motorcycle, birds chirping in spring. But here too, the following is important. Please concentrate only on the sound. It should be the case that these sounds resonate inside your ear, you don't actually hear them with your physical ear. If an image comes to mind, then concentrate again and repeat the exercise. Because if another sense joins in, they compensate for each other and the meaning of the exercise unfortunately becomes worthless. Personal notes. 3. Clarity of smell. Now remember the smell of freshly brewed coffee, Christmas cookies, a freshly mown lawn, a cigar, peppermint, a fragrant rose. It can be helpful to take a little air in through your nose to activate the clarity of smell. Otherwise, the sense of clarity of smell is one of those that is most likely to be atrophied, as we do not use it very consciously in everyday life, unless you work as a cook or in a perfumery, for example. Personal notes. 4. Light touch. Now imagine that you are stroking your pet's fur, running your hands through warm water, letting sand trickle through your hands, stroking a lawn, touching a smooth wooden surface, holding the hand of your child or a loved one. This sense is also not very strong for most people, unless you use your hands often and consciously for professional reasons. Personal notes. 5. Light touch, complain. Remember the taste of a lemon, chocolate, a peppermint candy, your favorite food, mineral water, a strawberry. Personal notes. Table 3. For entering the results, just tick the appropriate box. When training all of these senses, it is important to concentrate only on the particular sense you are currently practicing with. Of course, you can also use as many other images as you like to further sensitize yourself. In everyday life, you can train your senses at any time by consciously perceiving. What am I seeing right now? What am I hearing right now? What am I smelling right now? What am I touching right now? What does what I have in my mouth taste like? In this way, by activating the physical senses, the mental ones are also fed and supplied with information. This is beneficial when connecting with the spiritual world, because the sensory pool that the spiritual world can draw on is larger than before. You can also use any magazine to practice when you're at the doctor's or hairdresser's. Simply open it somewhere and activate a corresponding sense. For example, what would the picture I just opened smell like? You can see that there is never a lack of opportunities to practice. In summary, you could say, a sensual person is someone who consciously perceives and uses their senses to do so. This means they have a more intense experience than others, which of course also increases their quality of life. About 50 centimeters away from the object and focus it so that it is sharp. Then just wait and you will quickly see a white layer forming around the object or the person. It can also happen that you see colors. These are all layers of the aura that are visible to the naked eye. It is important that you do not focus on the object again out of sheer joy at seeing something, because then the effect is gone and you have to start again. For those who wear glasses, it is even easier. Take off your glasses and look directly at the object, because you will not be able to draw it clearly anyway due to your poor eyesight. Personal notes. Another description for the look with which you see the aura is the famous daydreamer's look. If you can create this at the push of a button, then you will quickly be able to see the aura of a person, animal or plant. It should also be said that this exercise can lead to headaches if you do it for too long, as it takes a lot of energy for the brain not to focus. Exercise 4, feeling the aura. The aura can also be felt with your hands. Simply ask a friend to stand still and slowly move towards them with the palms of your hands. You shouldn't start too close to the body, as you may already be in the person's aura. 2 meters away would be a good starting point. As you move towards the person, you will eventually feel a change in the palm of your hand. It can feel like resistance, cold air, tingling, pressure, hot hands, and much more. There is no right or wrong, no good or bad. Every aura has its own vibration and therefore feels different accordingly. Cold does not necessarily mean bad, it simply means cool. Personal notes. The image level. In order to work with inner images, something important should be clarified beforehand. There are people who receive predictions in the form of images. These correspond one-to-one to what will happen in the future in reality. Then you only need to describe and reproduce them. However, this is only the case for a few people and must be researched through constant observation and checking. Most people, however, see so-called meaningful images. It is important to know how to translate and interpret these. A lot of information can then be extracted from these meaning images. For this you need a simple set of tarot cards. Those that are heavily illustrated are best. Exercise 1, developing meaning images. Now concentrate mentally on a question that concerns you and on the word solution. Then draw a tarot card of your choice, turn it over and pay attention to which part of the image you notice first. You no longer need to think about the question. Now think about what this part of the image reminds you of personally. An event from your life or a feeling? Now formulate one or two keywords for this personal memory and then recall your question. The keyword provides the crucial clue to the solution to the problem that is troubling you. Don't despair if you initially cannot see the connection between your question and the keyword. Practice and patience make perfect. Inner meaningful images are produced from what you have experienced so far. So you will only find the translation there. Ask yourself, what do I personally associate with this image from my life? And it is precisely this feeling or the insights that are linked to this image that are the solution or the answer to your question. Personal notes. Exercise 2, partner exercise with meaningful images. Ask a partner to ask a question in their mind and concentrate on the solution that they have not yet found. Now connect emotionally with the person you are talking to and let a spontaneous image appear in your mind's eye. Now proceed with this image in the same way as in the exercise. Formulate a keyword from it. Talk to your partner about it and ask if they can do something with it. The exciting thing about it is that you don't have to know the question to answer it. Here too, practice is an essential part of success.